College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock. Now here's your host, Kevin Nagandi.
Championship weekend is almost here, and ahead, former Miami star Jonathan Vemma, who's now on ABC with me on Saturdays, he's going to join us to talk about the one big issue he might have with the playoff ranking, something that's been bugging him for a month. Also, his favorite player to watch right now in college football. Plus, I'm sure we'll get a U story. I love his U stories here, and we'll hear it on the podcast. The travel season has our boy Pollock everywhere. He catches a break with game day in Atlanta this weekend for the SEC championship game. And Pollock, I saw you in Bristol on Tuesday and then in New York on Wednesday on the get upset with Paul Feinbaum when Feinbaum said no one wants to see Utah, and you're just sitting there on the set and I'm like, oh, this should be fun. What was that like?
It's always interesting. You know, listen, I think you're used to it with Paul. I mean, he's just whatever he wants to say that will strike a nerve with people, I think he's going to say. And I think everybody knows that they're not, that doesn't resonate. And I don't think the committee even remotely thinks like he thinks, or even, you know, placate to something like that. They're looking for the four best teams. That's their task. But no, it was interesting. And then did First Take with him and Stephen A, and they were yelling at each other back and forth about who has the bigger mouth. And it was hilarious. It was hilarious because both of them were, both of them obviously have loud mouths and big opinions. And, you know, so it was fun. And, season's coming to an end, bro. It's almost over, man.
I know. I'm kind of disappointed and depressed about that because we won all the matchups. We can't wait to see the games down the road. And then when it's here and you're like, wow, we've gone through 15 weeks. It's very weird. Now we get ready for these championship games. And I also think that it's still very weird because there is scenarios, and we talked a little bit about this last month, that, you know, if Ohio State were to lose in the Big Ten championship game, they're still in. If LSU were to lose in the SEC championship game, they get in. Now, there was a discussion this week, and RD brought it up on Tuesday on SportsCenter with me, that if Clemson were to lose in the ACC championship, they still get into the playoff. What's your thoughts about the role of the conference championship games right now?
Well, I mean, everybody talks about expansion every single year. And I mean, is that really something you'd want right now if you're looking at everything that's going on? Because how many of these championship games would even matter at all? You know, I mean, because right now we're sitting at, I think Clemson, if they lose, I think you would still make a case that they're unequivocally better than, say Georgia loses to LSU, they're unequivocally better than Oklahoma. They're unequivocally better than Utah. They're unequivocally better than, you know, Baylor. I believe that. And I think if people are being honest, they believe that. Now, I'm not saying they've done anything to earn it throughout the season with the ACC being absolutely horrendous, but, you know, if you're talking about being a better football team, it's definitely the case. But, you know, LSU can lose. I think Ohio State can lose. Both those teams would still be in it. Now, that would jack with the seedings and what we deem important of who is, you know, because right now we're saying you don't want to be in the four hole, you know, but that might change where you want to be and who you want to be. But it's kind of at a point where the championship games aren't really that big of a factor this weekend, except for a couple you're going to pay attention to. And listen, if Utah was to lose Friday night, that changes everything. Now listen, in the end, Georgia holds the keys, but Baylor and OU might kick off, and that'd be a cool little Big 12 championship game with nothing at stake if Georgia already won the SEC championship game, you know? So it's, I don't think that's what you want. I love that. I love those Saturdays when we watch and everything's at play. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, whatever happens is going to be a big deal. That would be really cool to watch some of those weekends, you know, as in the committee's eyes too.
On Monday, I played a scenario out with Herbie, and it was this concept of let's expand it to 8 teams, the playoff. And here's the theory here, where you get rid of the conference championship games. And this is the weekend where the top 4 seeds can host games. And the teams from 5 through 8 have to travel. And that's how you have a quarterfinal playoff. And then you still have the bowl season. You still have the possibility of down the road where you have, you know,
are those people out of the bowl season though? Those people will be out of the bowl season, right? After they lose?
They would be out of the bowl season.
Okay. Sorry. Just making sure.
Are you okay with that? Are you, because then we have something at stake this weekend And you're rewarding teams from the regular season with those home games. And I think also you're rewarding the fan bases so they don't have to worry about traveling to, I got to go to Atlanta. I got to go to Phoenix. I got to go to Miami. I got to go to New Orleans. You can go in your backyard if you're a top four team. Do you like that concept?
I don't like many of your concepts, but I actually like that one. That's pretty solid. Now, here's the thing though. You got to realize, Kevin, that's a huge moneymaker for the conference though. And again, we're in the business. The NCAA is in the business to make money. So I would wonder how that would, you know, that would shake out. I would also be curious because I would think you'd need unanimous support. And remember, we can't even get support on a conference schedule from league to league. You know what I'm saying? Like everybody, we can't get everybody to play 9 conference games. We can't get everybody to do, you know, a championship. I love the championship game when it's the best 2 teams in the league. You know, I love that the Big 12 does that. I think it gives them a legitimate shot now to be in the playoff and not having divisions from sides. I mean, if Clemson was in a debate with somebody and, you know, and they were playing Virginia and OU and Baylor are playing each other for a chance to play another quality top 8 opponent, it's, you know, you could have a chance to really prove yourself. So I wouldn't mind that theory. I like 4 because I like the exclusivity of it. I like that every game's supposed to matter. And, you know, can you stumble along the way? Certain teams? Absolutely. You can stumble along the way, but you also are playing if you play a ridiculous schedule, you should be afforded the right to stumble. So it's kind of I kind of like it how it is. Either way, it's better than 2. I know that, bro.
Oh gosh. Yeah, can you imagine if we had 2 right now, the discussion that we would have about Clemson trying to get in?
Oh, I mean, man.
Dabo's upset right now.
He would be
with
livid.
4. Can you imagine what he would be like? And he has a legitimate case. Now, granted, it's not his fault the ACC is down, but they're the defending champs, and that quarterback's gotten better, and that defense has been outstanding all season long.
Yeah, but the league's bad.
It's bad. Not good.
There's no way in Hades you could tell me that I would take Clemson and LSU or Clemson over Ohio State or LSU if we were in the BCS era because, I mean, just one got challenged, one didn't. I mean, that just, you know, one had a lot to prove and proved it and didn't. But, you know, and then LSU would still have to beat Georgia to get in that mix. But who cares? That's gone. We know that's over. Thank God.
Yeah, and we'll talk a little bit about the Georgia conversation and the issues that they have, especially on offense, losing George Pickens in the first half and the injuries they're dealing with before they face LSU. We will talk about that when we make our picks. I want to remind everyone, if you have a question you want to hear on the podcast for Herbie or Pollock, tweet using the hashtag CFBPod. We've got a couple questions for Pollock at the end of the pod here when he's talking to us. Let's just get right into it, and let's go to the matchups. And let's start with Friday night. Utah versus Oregon in Santa Clara. Utah is favored in this one. It is their stage in prime time. And, you know, if anybody, questions Utah and says, we don't want to, you know, the country doesn't want to watch them, maybe it's because they haven't had the chance to watch them. Now you have no excuse. You get the chance to watch this defense. And I think the most underrated backfield in the country. When you look at this game, what stands out when it comes to matchups?
So I'm going to go ahead and give you your homework now, while I'm talking, because I know sometimes you're good at looking things up. So I want the pronunciation for number 80, the tight end for Utah. If you can get that for me now while we're talking, while I go ahead and discuss, Utah. Cause by the way, you could do that with their defensive tackles. You could do that with a lot of players, for Utah. But I think if you're not watching Utah, you're missing out. I think Zach Moss runs angrier and more physical than any back in college, football. He is really, sensational. I think Tyler Huntley is elusive and can make plays at the quarterback spot. Now listen, he is frail. Like he is not a big guy, and he's been banged up all year. He limps off the field a lot consistently. You know, he is the guy that in this type of game, when you're going to watch this matchup, Kev, I think there's going to be a lot to do with quarterbacks running the football. It's the end of the season. I don't care anymore. I have to win this game. This game matters. Utah, obviously, me and you have talked about this for months now about Utah, and you know, I had them in the college football playoff before the season started, full disclosure, and I was a big fan of their defense coming into this season. I'm a big fan of their special teams always with Coach Whittingham, big fan of Huntley and Moss coming into the season. The emergence of, what's his name? Can you pronounce it for me?
Brant Keithy.
Keefe. The emergence of Keefe, I think, is really taking this offense. I don't think they have great weapons on the perimeter, but that dude can fly. Like he's a tight end in the nowadays mold, but he's a tight end with the speed. And you saw him last week. He took a jet sweep and you could see the speed. Just, I mean, he can fly. He can really, really run a matchup nightmare. Did a great job in the red zone with him with a little boot and used his speed to come across the field on a little over route. And I think Utah and Oregon, the matchup, I think Utah is a great team. I think they're a complete team. They're a physical team. Their brand is something you don't want to play, and they have a great chance to prove it against Oregon Friday.
And the defensive front is fantastic. Their secondary is really good. Jalen Johnson
really good.
Leading the way.
He's a stud.
They've got seven guys that could get drafted in the NFL. Seven guys on a defensive unit that could be in the NFL. That's how loaded they are.
I think six for sure get drafted. I mean, at least six. You start going down roster by roster in all of college football. Now listen, if you watch the Colorado game too, Kev, you know, Colorado hurts them a little bit early with tempo, and you think about mm-hmm. Oregon and also you saw a great job by Montez, you know, shrugging off guys and scrambling and buying time. Justin Herbert can do that. He can do that really, really well, and they can run him a lot in this game. So I think the matchup defensively is, I got to run a lot of plays against these guys. I got to be able to go run the football. I got to be able to run it with my quarterback. I got to be able to spread the football around. I got to be able to tempo them because they are massive on the defensive line. Not like kind of big. They're still an old school defensive line. They're a 330 in the middle, 320 in the middle, like big burly guys that, by the way, Kevin, those guys have kind of died in college football because of tempo. I mean, it's mm-hmm. changed, and those guys now have been forced to slim down. And so if you can tempo this offense a little bit or this defense a little bit, I think you can have success against them. I'll be curious to see that matchup with Oregon is if they can get that tempo rolling.
I'm curious to see also how Utah comes out. Like you mentioned Colorado early in that game. It felt like Utah was like, oh shoot, this is a big stage moment here. Senior night, we're on primetime ABC, and then they settled down. Then you saw the talent went out, right? And yep. In the beginning, it was like Colorado was ready. Colorado didn't have four quarters of them matching up against Utah. Oregon does have four quarters in them to match up with Utah on both sides, especially that Oregon defensive front. So I'm curious to see how Utah responds.
Still high on that Oregon defensive
hits.
Front, huh?
I am. I really like them.
Yeah,
I do. I do.
That's great.
You're not a fan, but I do like their
Oregon I think everybody got caught up in the middle of the season when they played a lot of bad opponents that front was dominant, and I don't think it is. Now listen, I think the Oregon offensive line is very dominant and very physical, and I love, you know, watching those guys compete. I think they're really, really good. And that matchup versus a very, very physical, Utah defensive line will be awesome.
All right. So we're both going Utah, right?
Yep.
Yeah. I think so too. But I wouldn't be surprised if Justin Herbert surprises, everybody, including everybody in the conference of the Pac-12, considering what's riding on the Utes here and trying to make the playoff. All right. Let's go to the Big 12 championship game rematch, Baylor versus Oklahoma. Last
you
time
go
we
first.
Saw
you
this,
go first in this game.
You saw Baylor dominate in that first half, and then it was the Jalen Hurts show in the second half in Waco. I'm going Oklahoma because I don't think they understand what's at stake, and I don't know if Baylor, as we saw in that second half, Oklahoma make adjustments. I don't know if Baylor has the offense to stay with Oklahoma the rest of the way. I mean, they're favored by 9 points, the Sooners. I like Oklahoma in this one.
God, you can't do a pick without giving a spread, can you? You just can't. Well,
I think it adds a little context to the conversation.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I hear you. I'm going to go Baylor. I think Baylor's going to win. I think when I look at this matchup, first of all, Jalen Hurts, historic season again with the quarterback spot. Lincoln Riley has further cemented himself as the best play caller. He's won in college football. I don't think there's anybody any better, just the way it's not just the creativity, but it's the willingness to adapt to who he has and what he has. And it's been unbelievable to watch him because now you got, you know, you look at Oklahoma on tape and you see a lot of two back sets now and, split backs. So you can go either direction and make a defense stay balanced, and you can still use his Hurts' running ability. And here's the problem. It's not Jalen Hurts' ability to run the football. It's Jalen Hurts' power that is the problem. It's if you watch him, Kevin, you see guys consistently in spots that all they got to do is bring him to the ground. But he's so dadgum strong and he's so stout and he's an elite runner. He's an elite leader. He's an elite athlete. He's a running back playing the quarterback spot and he's just really, really hard to bring down. But he's going to have to tote it a lot. He's going to have to tote it consistently. And last time when they played Baylor, obviously he's carrying the ball over 20 times and it was him almost every single play. I think Baylor's defense can slow them down again. I think Baylor's offense will get a little bit more going with Brewer, and he'll run the football. And I think Baylor has done a consistent job of taking care of the football. OU hasn't. I think OU makes a few mistakes and I think Baylor capitalized and I think Baylor wins the Big 12.
Now, the difference in this game from the one we saw 3 weeks ago is Oklahoma gets CeeDee Lamb on the field in this offense, and you're still picking Baylor.
Yeah, they get CeeDee
Lamb on the field.
They get CeeDee Lamb on the field, but I think Baylor with their defense and how they protect themselves in the back end, again, it's going to have to be a lot of hurts. It's going to have to be a lot of the running game. And I have no doubts that Oklahoma's the favorite. I don't trust them not to turn the football over. Jalen doesn't see it like those guys in the past that they've had it there. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see how conservative Lincoln gets, but I think it's a really close game. I think it's 31-27 and I think Baylor finds a way to pull it out.
Wow, 31-27. I'm actually going to go a little bit higher. I think it's going to be something like in the late high 30s, I should say, and maybe low 40s.
I go ball control if I'm Baylor.
You have to, right?
Last time they didn't do that. Last time you saw the game and the time of possession was it was 40 something to 18. It was like 42 to 18 in time of possession, which is if you don't know, that's just absolutely stupid, silly. I mean, that doesn't happen, very often. You very rarely ever see that. It was legit. And Baylor got tired. I like what Baylor does defensively. I think they can run the football a little bit more effectively. And I think Brewer will carry it as much as necessary. And, I think they'll do a better job of slowing the tempo down as opposed to last time they went really fast and they were at home and they got, you know, they got the juices flowing, all that stuff. I would slow the tempo down a little bit and make sure I run Brewer. And the offensive line is the only thing I really worry about with them because they don't protect Brewer exceptionally well.
Baylor, Oklahoma is on ABC at noon. Then at 3:30 is the American and, Cincinnati and the Memphis rematch from a week ago. Memphis is favored by 9 points. I'm going with the Tigers because I don't know if Cincinnati has a reliable quarterback that we have seen with this team. I think defensively Cincinnati will keep it close, but their quarterback cannot answer back and forth what we're seeing from Brady White and Gainwell.
Which quarterback? You know, that's what's going to be.
Exactly, right? I mean, that's a big question at Cincinnati.
Well yeah, I mean, I don't know the details of Ritter, but you know, obviously Bryant comes in last week and you could tell he can throw the daggum football. And then he was throwing it all over the yard and successfully, but made a couple young mistakes that your first start, Bobby, probably you're more inclined to do. But I do know what I get with Ritter, and Ritter can run the football. And again, this time of year, championship on the line, run the daggum football. Run it with your quarterback. And Warren had a good day last week. And listen, I thought Cincinnati did great after they gave up 17 first quarter points. They kept it together a little bit, and then fourth quarter they kind of broke down. I'll go Memphis too because of the offense, and I think it's – easy for them to score points and they have great balance and they can throw the football and Cincinnati can't. But if that weather could be really bad, I put Ritter in the game. I run the football with the zone read a lot with him and I find a way to win a championship.
Yeah, Brian made his first career start a week ago in that loss to the Tigers. Ritter,
he was pretty good. He can sling the ball. He threw it well.
And you saw the talent. You saw why he was such a high recruit before in high school. For Ritter, it's his shoulder injury, and at the time of this taping of the podcast, it's still unknown, but Luke Fickell says Ritter's his quarterback, so it depends on how practice plays out and how he feels with that shoulder.
You just go, T.O., okay. I mean, that's my quarterback. That's my quarterback.
Well, that's what Fickell's saying, okay. At least right now, making sure he's holding the team together. All right, SEC championship game.
Hey!
And I mentioned it briefly.
Big showdown.
But come on. Georgia, LSU, and Georgia's offense, we've seen it all season. They're not going to be like LSU or Alabama.
What's the line on this one, by the way? You're Mr. Gambler.
I think
you're shuffling through your papers
here. Hold on.
It's definitely not double digits. I don't know anything about lines.
Six and a half. Yeah,
it's definitely not double digits.
Yeah.
So
6.5.
So make LSU. Me a case. What you got? I mean, just beat down boat race. LSU just runs Georgia out the building.
No. I didn't say that. I'm just saying where they need to have DeAndre Swift consistently getting the ball. We'll see. He's been dealing with those shoulder contusions all season.
He's fine.
Losing Pickens in the first half is such a big deal when you don't have Cager. I think it's a big deal. Don't you?
You don't have your top two receivers. You don't have the guys probably, if you watch Fromm and the guys that you actually trust are Cager, who's been ridiculous this season and contested catches through the roof. Unbelievable. Best in the country by far. I think 13 contested catches out of 16 attempts, something like that, which is just silly. It's asinine. So that obviously is a huge deal, but listen, this is such a cool matchup because LSU, number four in the country in creating explosive plays. By the way, Brent Rollins, my boy Brent Rollins for PFF does a great job with his stats and stuff. Fourth most explosive offense, Georgia, number one in the country in explosive offense. You know, when you look at LSU's offense and you watch them, here's what it's going to take, Kevin. It's going to take Kirby Smart and this defense that has been dominant all year long, swallowing some pride and leaving the ego at the door when you go call this game. I mean, think about that. What you've done all year long up until this point, you can't do it against LSU. You can't. You're going to have to change it up. You're going to have to play more defensive backs. You're going to have to be comfortable giving up the run game. You're going to have to be comfortable giving up a lot of yards. But when you get in the red, you better play good. You better play physical. You better force some field goals. That's where you're at with this LSU offense. It's firing on too high of a level. Burrow, by the way, Kevin, his worst game, he completed 71%. Not his best. His worst game, the ball is still barely touching the ground. I mean, it's been unbelievable. His pinpoint accuracy. And I can do this because it's a podcast, so I can like be a geek real quick on what they do with their offense. Okay. If you blitz LSU, here's your names. You need to know where Allaire is and you need to know where Chase is. Cause that's what they're going to do. That's exactly what they're going to do. You blitz them. They're going to get the ball out to those two guys really quickly because they're really good after the catch. They're hard to tackle. If you play single high safety, they're going to throw fades and they're going to throw, you know, the deep overs and really try to take shots because you only have one safety in the middle of the field. They're going to take advantage of that just having a safety in the middle. If you're going to run, you know, all your dime packages in there and play a bunch of DBs, which Georgia doesn't do a ton of, they're going to just pound the football and run duo at you. So, and here's the thing. You rush three or four, Joe Burrow buys time. And he shrugs people off and then makes big time plays and completions. So it's really silly to watch, man. I think, you know, they're going to get theirs. There's nothing you can do about it. Georgia's better in the secondary than Auburn was, but they still had a tremendous amount of success. And if you're asking me to pick an offense that revolves around Jake Fromm and Georgia being consistent and scoring 30, I don't think you can take that. I just don't see how you make that because they have been up and down and mostly down the last 6 weeks when you watch that football team. The Florida game is the only game that you looked at and you went, wow, that offense looked really good. So, I mean, I have to take LSU too. And if you're a Georgia fan and you're upset with that, if you've watched Georgia's offense, I don't know how you would take Georgia.
Well, when we started this discussion and looked at the matchup, you were egging me on to about, you know, is Georgia going to get boat raced? And then you did this whole breakdown about how great LSU's offense is.
So great.
So is Georgia going to get boat raced?
I think
LSU wins by 10 points in this game.
Yeah, I could see that happen. If Georgia plays really well, and here's the thing with this offense, like you got to get some breaks. You know, you got to get a few tip passes to slow down and you got to get Joe Burrow to the ground. I think they can slow them down. I don't bet on their offense to score. How much have you been holding out for this game and how much can you change and how many plays can you make? I just don't see them going tip for tack. I see LSU getting in the 30s. I don't see Georgia. So no, I would lean towards them winning by 10 or winning by 7 plus. So I don't know where the line started and how it's moving and where the smart money is, Kevin. I'm sure you got all those answers, but I don't, I can't bet on a Georgia offense like that to consistently win when they haven't done it the last several weeks.
That's for another podcast. Sanford, Steve, and the Bear, they've got that covered on how this line is moving. I'm just telling you what the line looks like on the taping of the podcast at this time. And, I think LSU covers. So, all right, well, let's move on. The big question is, will Clemson cover? They're 28.5 point favorites. Jeez. In the ACC championship game against Virginia.
And, wow. And when you look poor Dabo. Tell you what, you want to complain and whine, but you're a 28-point favorite over your next best team in your league.
In your conference, right? Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Just think about that real quick. That's how bad the league is. The league's a bad, bad, bad league. It's bad. Historically.
I will
bad.
Say it's one Bobby Bowden-esque. One stat here on Clemson, and it's Trevor Lawrence in his last five games. 16 touchdowns, no picks. The point totals for Clemson's offense in those five games, 59, 59, 55, 52, and 38. He's a different quarterback. He's been a different quarterback in the second half of the season.
No.
And, anything you want to talk about when it comes to Clemson and Virginia, I'm not so much about the game, but just Bryce Perkins, or do you want to highlight anything about what you've seen so far from Clemson on their offense and defense?
No. I'm good. I mean,
we will talk a lot about Tigers then.
You're talking about Boston College, Wofford, and NC State and Wake Forest.
That's okay, but still, it's the whole point is the whole point. Me giving those numbers out is just early in the season. It felt like he was trying to do too much. You know, much was made about those eight picks, right?
Let me ask you a question real quick.
Completely settled down.
Yeah, let me ask you a question real quick. How good did Georgia's offense look last week?
They looked okay in the second half, but there was times where he was just like, Fromm wasn't making some throws in that first half. He made a couple okay, but there were some throws where you're like, uh-oh, what the heck is going on here? He does not look
Kevin,
like.
Can I ask you what the score was?
Oh, 52-7.
52-7. Was that an ACC team?
It was.
So Jake Fromm's offense looked phenomenal and Georgia looks phenomenal after, by the way, dropping a punt, giving up an onside, fumbling three or four times, you know, losing at least two of them.
But here's, here's the difference though.
It just shows.
Some of Fromm's throws in that first half, you're like, well, he does not look comfortable. He does not look right. And then some of the weapons, I mean, Pickens came in later on, but Pickens not there, Cager not there. When Trevor Lawrence is on the field, you've got ETN in the backfield who doesn't play all four quarters because they don't need him. And
Never.
Then you've got two Sunday wide receivers and you're like, okay, Higgins, Ross, I can do whatever I want. And that's the thing that stands out when you watch Clemson's offense matched up against Georgia.
By the way, you want to know another advantage of being Clemson is what you just said. ETN carries. You don't have to worry about it. You know, resting the second half the time, all these guys, you build depth, you stay fresh, you don't get dinged up, you don't have to play near as many plays. It's a huge, you know, listen, Dabo coming out and saying what he said and stuff. I love Dabo Swinney with all my heart. I love everything he stands for. It's the truth. We have to acknowledge the truth about what the conference is. But, and again, I think Clemson's got a great shot and I'm possibly going to pick them to win a national title. So it has nothing to do with them. Has nothing to do with that team. It's just the league is exactly what it was, you know, during those Bobby Bowden years. It's really, 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 really bad.
Well said. Let's go to the Big Ten championship, and that is Ohio State versus Wisconsin rematch for the Badgers. Hopefully they have multiple people blocking Chase Young. When you look at this rematch,
not a tight
what
end.
Stands out? Exactly. What stands out in this matchup?
This isn't much different. What's the spread in this one there, Kevo? It's gotta be at least, it's gotta be at least touchdowns.
Here, right?
It's gotta be at least two touchdowns. I mean, last time they played,
by the way,
it was 38-7.
16.5.
Last time was 38-7. Listen, we know what's going down here, by the way. Like this is very Clemson, Virginia-esque. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say this. I was very, very impressed with Wisconsin last week. I was impressed with their offense making big plays, not Jonathan Taylor, their offense making big plays in the passing game. Cone was really, really good in tough, tough elements. I mean, it was the weather stunk last week. I mean, it was awful. And he was, you know, it wasn't about Jonathan Taylor. It was about Jack Cone making big plays down the field, and Cephas is his guy. And, but he, you know, he had another, big 70-yard pass, and he threw a couple passes to Taylor, and you know, they got nothing for Ohio State. I don't, maybe Justin Fields' MCL is banged up more than we think. You know, maybe he can't run the football, but J.K. Dobbins has been an absolute workhorse the last several weeks. And by the way, he's going to be really the one to watch because again, they've been blowing people out and he hasn't had to carry the football, you know, as much as kind of very similar to ETN-esque. ETN. You know, he hasn't had to, but the last couple of weeks, you know, when it was go time and you were playing Penn State and Michigan, that dude had 31 and 36 carries. I mean, literally, I'm not exaggerating. And he's a workhorse. He's a big, thick dude that can really give you body shots and then Fields pulls it and the tempo gets you and you got a good defense that gets you the ball back. And you saw it when Michigan made mistakes and jumped off sides and gave him another first down, touchdown. Shea Patterson drops a snap inside the red zone. Boom, touchdown. Like it's just, it comes in waves, man. And it's just not going to be good for Wisconsin. I don't see how they really compete and make this a game.
So the Penn State game, Michigan game, 67 carries, like you mentioned, six total touchdowns from Dobbins.
And,
and it's phenomenal. And the soul breaker was where you see Fields go to the sidelines. He's got an injury and then he comes out with a brace. And then the first play, he rolls out and he throws a touchdown. If you're Michigan's defense, you're Don Brown. You're like, well, what do we need to do? Like this
That wasn't just a touchdown. That was a dime. People overuse that word, but that was disgusting. And I tell you what. I had a lot of people talk to me about, I don't know, just random people in a couple of different spots asked me about why would Michigan go for it on 4th and 3 inside their own, you know, 40-yard line and with 12 minutes left. And I was like, did you see the offense on the other side? Okay. If Harbaugh doesn't want to get beat by 30 or 20, then yeah, you don't go for it. You punt it. If you want to win the game, you got to go for it. And that's just the kind of pressure they put on you offensively and defensively, just constant pressure and athletes all over the field. And it's, man, it's been a heck of a season for Ohio State. And by the way, Lincoln Riley is number one in college football and play calling. Ryan Day is number two. So we've gotten both those guys covered in the podcast today.
Yeah. Ryan Day is special.
He's awesome.
We've talked about Lincoln Riley, you know, and the three quarterbacks that what he's done the last 3 years is pretty amazing. But Ryan Day, my goodness.
By the way, Ryan Day, for those people that don't know a lot about Ryan Day, because he's kind of, you don't really know a ton about him yet. You will. He's just think Dabo Sweeney, not Urban Meyer. He's not an iron fist dictator. He's not Nick Saban, Urban Meyer. He is a Dabo Sweeney. My door is always open. He loves on guys. More of an encourager, more of a positive than beat you down with a negative. And listen, there's multiple ways to skin a cat. I'm not saying which way is better, but when you think about his leadership style, that's what he is. He's not like the old school guys.
I thought he was perfect last year when they were dealing with all the drama surrounding Urban sitting out a couple games. I thought he handled it perfectly. He had the perfect temperature of the room, right? And handling the kids and making sure we're not going to panic here. We're going to just figure this out. And, he's handled that really, really well.
Yeah.
Big credit to him. All right. Now time for some, listener questions before we wrap things up with you. And before
if you're on a deserted island, what four things are you bringing?
Now we're not doing that game again.
Thank God.
You want to bring a sleeping bag. That was a disaster.
Jeez.
All right. Here's a pretty good question. In your eyes, who's the best group of five team right now? And if you pick Memphis, and if they lose this weekend, who takes that spot? The best
Cincinnati.
Group of five team.
Cincinnati should take that spot. And I know Boise's, you're going to tell me that Cincinnati has two losses and Boise has one.
I'm not going to tell you anything. I'm listening
to you. Okay. Okay. Well, I'm just telling, that's what people are going to say. People are going to say, Boise, wait a minute. Boise's sitting at what I think 19 or something like that. And they only have one loss. Why shouldn't Boise jump? Because if Boise played Ohio State, they'd get curb stomped too. Okay. That would have happened. And if Cincinnati wins the championship in a more competitive league, way more competitive league that they're in, and they beat Memphis on their home field and they're champs, it should be Cincinnati to me.
Really interesting question from Miss J on Twitter saying, does the swag bag factor into kids wanting to play in a bowl game? And did you get swag bags in your playing days when your teams made bowl games?
Oh yeah. And it was the greatest thing ever, bro. It was unbelievable. And remember, we're college kids and most of us don't have any money. And when you get a PlayStation or an Xbox you get a DVD player or whatever. I mean, we got all kinds of swag. You're dang right, man. It was a great, great day. I loved getting those bags as soon as you show up on campus. So it was, I don't think it'll motivate people to play in bowl games. Cause I think there's going to be that trend's already started that, you know, that's out of the box already. And that's not where we can't, that toothpaste is out of the tube and it's not going back in. You're not, you ain't going to get it back
in.
But I think the swag bags, when you show up, I remember getting mine and I was just like, this is so cool. Free goodies. Yes, please.
Okay. You lit up. Obviously we can't see you, but you could hear it in your, the tone of that response. You lit up. So tell me the one thing you got in a swag bag that you're like, oh my God, this is awesome.
I think it was it was an Xbox or a PlayStation. It was one of the two. When I got the video game, I was like, man, this is cool. Cause it was one of the newer ones. And you know, you don't, as a college kid, you ain't got $350 or whatever it was at the time to go buy the newest Xbox and, or PlayStation. So it was, I remember getting the video game in the Music City Bowl my freshman year and used it for the rest of my career on campus. It was a beautiful gift.
That's pretty cool. All right. Final question. You're jet setting around the country. What do you do while tackling long flights, delays, drives to and from the airport? Are you always prepping? Are you listening to music? What exactly are you doing in between that time?
I love to bring my stuff to study. And so Dragonfly, our app that we use to watch tape, you can download any game. So when I'm at home, I'll download games to make sure I have, you know, plenty to watch when I'm on the plane. I sleep a ton on planes. Love to pass out and go to sleep. And, there is no doubt about it. No ifs, ands, or buts, Kev. For the last, today's what, December 4th, December 5th. For the last at least 3 weeks, there's been Christmas music going in the ear. Every kind of Christmas music known to man. Absolutely beautimous. Listening to Christmas music, going to sleep, walking through airports, Wait. Running through airports, all that stuff.
You're a Christmas guy, huh?
That's great. You should see our house, Kev. Right now I'm doing the podcast. We have a tree in every room of our house. Our outside is slam packed. I mean, we have garland everywhere. The whole house is like Christmas threw up in here. It's absolutely beautiful. It's one of my favorite things of the year, man.
So it, yeah, and Taylor has this question in here, which is great. We're going to ask you this. So it's officially Hallmark movie season when it's Christmas time. Does Mrs. Pollock, do you guys watch Hallmark movies?
We're not Hallmark fans. Our neighbors, the Rollins, are huge, huge Hallmark fans. Deanna is. Not a Hallmark guy, but you better believe that us and the kids sit down and watch Christmas movies almost every night that I'm home. We watch Home Alone. We've already got a ton done with Home Alone and Elf and a bunch of those that everybody would know. But, yeah, we watch Christmas movies Palooza, man. It's awesome. We always make sure we get, and actually on the big screen, there's about 35 minutes away. They're bringing back Christmas Vacation on the big screen. So me and a bunch of,
really?
Oh yeah. On the big screen. So me and a bunch of my friends are going to load up and we're going to take off and we're going to go on a date night with all of our grown friends and go watch it.
Yeah, that is a great idea. I'm jealous. You're winning.
Oh, dude, it's
that
awesome.
Night. That,
dude,
that is
Christmas,
fantastic.
Christmas is amazing. Just awesome. Just, that's getting any better. You're a Christmas music and movie guy?
Huge, huge Christmas guy. And when you have a 3-year-old, a 5-year-old, and a 7-year-old, we're doing the whole elf thing around the house. And,
oh yeah.
You know, the magic is still there. I'm super protective of my 7-year-old, making sure like whatever he hears at school, cause I've already heard that there's rumors around that parents are telling their kids that Santa Claus doesn't exist. And I'm like,
what awful
that's
kids.
Not coming in this
Why
house.
Would parents even
that
do
is
yeah,
not
that's,
coming.
That's, no, I tell my
that
kids,
is not
my kids
coming
are,
in my house.
We are 11 and 9 in my house. And, you know, you're in full fledged fifth grade and the stories, I'm like, listen, Nicholas, let me tell you this, bro. Come sit down. Yo, daddy believes in Santa Claus. I believe Christmas is the greatest holiday ever. I said, you can believe whatever you want. I'm just telling you what I believe. Like you're going to hear all kinds of, and we have to talk to our kids and you're going to see it's going to get worse as soon as, and when they get older, they're going to learn. I mean, all kinds of stuff that's so inappropriate at school that they would never even remotely hear, at home. And just, you got to talk to the kids and like, listen, man, you're going to hear stuff that people say that they aren't true. Don't think your kids' friends are experts. Just come home and ask mommy or daddy. Anytime you want to ask something, ask mommy or daddy.
I actually said that to my boy, my oldest, and I said, yo, they may do that, but in our house, like, Santa Claus comes to our place. And I was like, I can't say anything about what they do, but don't worry, the magic is still here. And he's like, okay, all right, Dad. And I was like, and don't talk to your brother. don't put any doubts in the 5-year-old's brain, because the 5-year-old just loves the magic. And we had the Santa Claus, 2 on today, and we watched Elf
Let's
over
go.
The weekend. And
Let's
we
go.
All about
I got
it,
even, I had a lot of
Home
respect
Alone
for you. I've gained a lot of respect for you throughout the season, not with your picks, but I've gained a lot of respect for you as a dad and gotten to know you throughout the season. And that gives me even more respect for you. That's amazing. Wow. Great job, Dad.
Appreciate it. I am super cautious. Christmas is an untouchable topic in our house. We love it. So we're all about it. We don't have trees in every room, just trees in 4 rooms. Cause my wife goes crazy about it. All right, hey, listen, can't wait for the weekend, and we'll talk, of course, next week, cause plenty to talk about, when it comes to the rankings, the bowl games and the matchups. And, of course, we'll see who's that 4th team that's going, in the playoff conversation.
Yes, sir.
Up next, my guy on ABC. We do the halftimes together as well as the post games. Jonathan Velma. We're going to pull back the curtain on what we discussed while watching games on Saturday, and he's going to tell us the moment he knew his Miami squad was going to win the national championship his sophomore year. But first, let's hear from today's sponsors, Allstate and Dr. Pepper.
Because mayhem on Saturdays in the fall is inevitable. Mayhem happens on the field, off the field, and in the polls. Mayhem lives on the wind, in the rain, on the foot of an errant kick, and during a trap game. You'll find mayhem in the parking lot, during tailgates, charcoal that's not totally out, an errant football through a window, a flat tire, a lost side view mirror, etc. You get the point. Allstate protects you from mayhem in the parking lot and outside it, at home and away. You can't stop mayhem from happening, but you can get better protected from it with Allstate. The potential for mayhem during the playoff race is rampant. Underdogs, trap games, unexpected weather, etc., etc., etc. Get better protected from mayhem with Allstate. Contact your local Allstate agent today.
Make sure to tune in to my new favorite TV show, Fansville, presented by Dr. Pepper, returning every Saturday throughout the college football season during the commercials. Fansville is the only show that stars Dr. Pepper, puts the spotlight on fans, and perfectly captures the emotional roller coaster that is the college football season. Critics are saying it's good, fantastic, is anyone else thirsty? And literally the best thing since Diet Dr. Pepper and Dr. Pepper Cherry. In Fansville, Dr. Pepper delivers a tour de force performance alongside legendary college football co-stars Brian the Boz Bosworth and Eddie George. Experience the pain, the passion, and the deliciousness of college football fandom this fall on Fansville, presented by Dr. Pepper. So pull over, veer right, slant left, do what you gotta do to get to your local store and pick up some refreshing ice cold Dr. Pepper, the official drink of Fansville. And hey, while you're at it, don't be afraid to go for 2. He's won a national championship. He's won a Super Bowl. He was a first round pick in the NFL. But I think the thing that really stands out on his resume is that he gets the chance to work with me every Saturday in the fall on ABC. Great to have Jonathan Velma join us.
Here we go.
Here on the podcast.
This is how we're going to start this podcast off. Oh, my goodness.
Ah, come on. We have fun on Saturdays, me, you, and Sanchez, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I'll give you that.
Yeah, and the best part of what we do is, you know, when we're watching all the games, and I want to bring the audience into this, when we watch all these games, we've got 6 TVs, and we're looking at this game, looking at that game, looking at matchups, and having a discussion. We also debate, you know, who's worthy of getting in the top 4. You've been hot on one specific thing, that battle for the 4th spot, and I know you were high on Oregon throughout the season, and you're very high on Utah. How do you view this battle for the 4th spot, potentially, if Georgia loses and we have a discussion about the winner of the Big 12, Oklahoma, Baylor versus Utah if they beat Oregon?
You know, the debate for us, it's always a healthy debate because we're watching all the games, and you know, it makes it easier for us to have very poignant yet factual debates, whether we agree to disagree, or is kind of what I like to bring to the discussion of that fourth spot. Because when we have, if the committee or fans or whoever it is truly sitting there with an unbiased, objective eye and watching the game, then you start to look at teams as the season goes on and you see a theme and you see two sides, right? You see that, yes, they're winning. And then you start to say, well, who are they winning against? But then the second side is, well, how are they executing as a team, right? Because it's not always necessarily who's the best, most talented team. It's who's the team that's tackling well. Who's the team that makes the plays on offense when they need third down conversions? Then what is the style of play, right? So if you're saying, well, they don't have this big, gaudy win, or they're not blowing people out, well, that's fine, because maybe that's not their style. That's not their brand of football. So that's why I always look at teams like Utah in this example of the fourth spot. There's never going to be a time where they're just out there looking high-flying like an Ohio State, because that's not their brand of football. Are they still a very good team? Yes, because they execute very well. They do a good job. So when I look at the fourth spot, I'm looking and saying this is a team that's already at number five in the playoff committee's eyes. If we assume that Georgia loses their two-loss team and Utah wins against a ranked Oregon team, they should have every right to be number four and shouldn't be jumped.
All right, JV, let's play a scenario out. Let's just say Utah just gets by Oregon on Friday night, and then on Saturday, Oklahoma beats Baylor by two touchdowns. And then on that resume, Oklahoma can say, hey, this is the number seven team in the country, and we just beat them twice. With that scenario, who do you think should get that fourth spot?
In that scenario, I'm still saying Utah should get the fourth spot, because I'm looking and saying Utah, the brand of football Utah plays is not a brand where you are going to naturally just blow out opponents. They're not a high-flying offense. They rely on their defense. That's the brand or theme of the Utah football. And so if you look at Oklahoma and say, well, they beat Baylor by two touchdowns, what does that really mean when you're talking about the Big 12? Historically, we know the past five, six seasons, Big 12 defense isn't what it is. Now, I understand Baylor's defense is the best of the Big 12, but that doesn't really resonate with me, because that's also the same Baylor defense that was up 28-3 against Oklahoma and still found a way to lose the game. So I don't know if I put a lot of weight on a two-touchdown victory by Oklahoma as opposed to a Utah team having a win against Baylor, a top 13 team, and then winning the Pac-12.
Now, what are your thoughts about the championship games this coming weekend, especially with the discussion that OSU could lose and still get in, LSU could lose and they could still get in? And then, you know, there has been one topic here all week that Clemson could potentially lose to Virginia and still get in. Do you think that's okay?
Well, the short answer, no, I don't think it's okay. The longer answer is from now, this is year five of the playoff committee, the way I'm starting to understand or trying to understand how they view the teams and how they view losses, you know, the top three teams, LSU, Ohio State, Clemson, have all built up such a good resume that it frankly is, in the committee's eyes, better than the number five, six, seven teams, even if they have, if the number five, six, seven teams have significant victories. Do I like it? No, I don't like it. I don't necessarily agree with it, because the whole point is to have winning be the first and foremost, most important critical factor at all times. So if you lose, and I don't care when you lose, the fact is that you lost. It's not about late in the season. It's about the fact that you lost and teams under you won and they executed and they found a way to win, then you shouldn't be rewarded for that. And so an Ohio State and LSU, they should not be rewarded for losing to whoever their team, the opponent is, in a conference championship game and still make it to the playoff. That's just not the way that I ever thought the playoff committee would allow teams to get in. But unfortunately, that's kind of the way that they think. They try to take a very contradictory approach, if you ever listen to them, where they say, we're taking a snapshot of what happened week by week, and everything can change week by week. But then they also turn around and say, well, the body of work of a particular team over the entire season. So it's like, well, if you're taking the body of work over the entire season, then them losing in a given week really doesn't matter. So you telling me a week by week cases is irrelevant, or you have to take it the other way. One, they're contradictory. You can't have both.
How do you view Clemson, especially with Dabo, going off on Saturday and then doubling down earlier this week on his team and how everybody wants to keep him out and how well they're playing right now? How do you view the messaging that Dabo's delivering this week about his team?
Man, I love it, Kev, and he's right. You know, they were ready to write off Clemson after the narrow escape against North Carolina. And from then on, it was all about, oh, Clemson this, Clemson that, Clemson this. If they lose, they're out. If they lose, they're out. And so there's definitely truth to that. And the reality is, was, still is, that there was one player that was not playing well for Clemson at that time. That was Trevor Lawrence, the quarterback. Everybody else on that team was playing well. You had Travis Etienne. He just won Offensive Player of the Year. So you can't tell me they didn't have a run game. It's just one ACC Defensive Player of the Year. You can't tell me that they didn't play defense. But it was just one player that finally got his act together, Trevor Lawrence, the quarterback, and now they're playing lights out. So it was very unfair to hear all the times that they didn't win by 50 against somebody, that, oh, they're going to possibly be out. They started off ranked number 5 as undefeated, defending national champions, and still were number 5 in the first college football playoff rankings. So that tells you everything you need to know about how they felt about Clemson and couldn't wait for them to lose a game to knock them out. So there's definitely truth to that. And then, of course, he uses that as motivation to keep his kids focused. But, you know, there's a lot of inconsistencies within that college football playoff committee that we could talk about on another day that needs to be addressed.
But he also is sticking up for the ACC. But you got to admit, the ACC is just not a good conference right now outside of Clemson, right? I mean, like, after what we've watched, like, they're going into their conference championship game, and the second best team is now a 28.5-point dog, which is Virginia, in the championship.
I agree with you, Kev. The ACC is down, and I agree with you. But let's also take into account that not every conference is playing just top-tier talent all the time, right? And you can even make an argument for the SEC. The SEC has three tiers of teams. You have, obviously, LSU, Georgia, Tier 1. You put Alabama there. They're usually there. Then you have, like, Florida as a Tier 2. And then, you know, given any given year, if Bama or LSU is struggling, whoever's struggling, you have them as Tier 2. Then you have the rest. And the rest, frankly, isn't that damn good. Like, let's just be honest. Vanderbilt stinks. Kentucky was a 500 team. Ole Miss was terrible. Arkansas is poo-poo. So there is a lot of garbage in the SEC that is comparable to the ACC, comparable to the Pac-12 and the Big 12. It's just that the top few teams are really damn good, so we don't talk about it. And unfortunately for the ACC, the only top-tier team is Clemson, and then the rest is garbage.
Yeah, and what we talk about, too, is we get in a really good discussion. I love picking your brain when we watch these offenses, especially the last couple of years. You've been really down on the defenses of the Big 12, calling it 7-on-7. But we've seen that blend in into the SEC, you know, with LSU and Alabama. With all the changes to help offenses and what we see with targeting and how we see the physical play kind of – change, at least for defensive players. Do you think, with your style and what you brought 2 decades ago, do you think you could play college football right now and still be the same player?
No, I could not play college football right now and still be the same player. I would be viewed as a borderline dirty player in college football right now. And it was because I was taught to impose my will. I was taught to be, well, first let's just take a step back. I was only 6 foot, like 220 pounds in college playing middle linebacker. So I was already small. And so the only way that I knew to make up for my lack of size was to be overly aggressive. And so I was taught to impose my will on opponents. And the way you impose your will was literally going and you aim for the head. That's where I would aim for when I would tackle, because their body goes where your head goes. So if I can get a nice shot under your chin and bring your head back, your momentum stops. Your body's going to go back with your head. So that's the way I was taught to play football, was uber aggressive and go out there and you are trying to, as legally as possible, take these players out. That's what I was taught. And that's not the way the game is played. The game is a lot different now, understandably so, and I completely get why. But you also now have players that are taking it to another extreme on the defensive side of, frankly, just being soft, right? And they try to mask their softness or lack of toughness or lack of aggression behind the rules of, oh, well, we can't do this, we can't do that. And I'm like, yeah, I hear you. But then I watch a Clemson defense, and they still go out there and play very physical. I watch an Ohio State defense, and they're still very physical. So, you know, I don't want to hear all that nonsense about the rules of change. And that's where, you know, me and you know, I can't stand it. When I watch some defenses and people, you know, they're always like, oh, you're just getting on the Big 12. And I'm like, no, like the first thing I look for to start a game when I'm watching a defense, I'm looking for tackling and I'm looking for hustle and effort. If you are telling me that Joe Burrow throws a beautiful ball to Ja'Marr Chase that only Ja'Marr Chase could catch and it was well defended, I'm the first one to say, man, great throw, great catch. But if you're going to kind of turn your back and act like you want to make a tackle, but you really don't, so you kind of just throw yourself in the vicinity of the running back and you whiff, and you're trying to tell me that that was your best effort, like, I'm going to throw up. You can't tell me that that's good defense. That's horrible defense. That's scary defense. So there's a difference between offenses that are executing really well with Sunday players that are just outperforming your talent. And then you just have softness and weakness. That's a big, big difference.
I laugh because just even how you say the word softness, it just drives you crazy. and it's enjoyable for me to sit next to you while you're watching these games because, listen, you pointed out and you do a great job of pointing out what is the right way to play football nowadays and what is the wrong way. And so let's have some positive stories here. Who's your favorite player to watch right now when you watch all these games all season?
Offense or defense?
It does not matter. The one player where you're I love that guy.
Interesting. Okay. Interesting. So surprisingly, my favorite player to watch right now is a toss-up between Jonathan Taylor and Isaiah Simmons. And I love watching Taylor because he's a throwback running back. He's like extremely patient. He is very explosive. He's tough. He doesn't go down on the first tackle. So I like that guy a lot. I love watching him. And then plus Wisconsin, old school, have a fullback offense. Like, I love that. And then, of course, Isaiah Simmons, where you're talking about a guy that's like 6'4", 230 pounds, and he literally lines up everywhere. And every time I watch a Clemson defense, the first thing I look for is him. Like, all right, where is he now? Sometimes he's lined up as a safety and then blitzes from 20 yards. He's on the edge sometimes. He lines up as a backer. I mean, that type of versatility and his physicality is fun. It's refreshing. It's refreshing to watch a guy like that this day and age.
All right, before we let you go, and you know, I love these stories. I followed you guys. Obviously, I was at the game, and I've told you this repeatedly. I was at the Tallahassee game where you guys ended the long streak at Doak. That U team was pretty special back in 2001. Do you have a favorite story from your days at the U when you're playing you know, with a defense that features first rounders everywhere you turn in the huddle. And then you look at the offense and it's a bunch of first rounders as well. Do you have a you story that you want to share with us here on the podcast?
Yeah, I got a pretty good one. I have a story of the moment I knew we were going to win the national championship my sophomore year versus Nebraska. And I remember we won against Virginia Tech literally 30 days prior to us going out and playing in the Rose Bowl for the championship against Nebraska. And that year, Eric Crouch won the Heisman, and they talked about, you know, how fast he is. He runs a 4.4. They run this triple option. Miami struggles against a triple option. They haven't seen this type of speed at the quarterback position before. So, you know, we're like, okay, interesting. I respect all my opponents. So, you know, we're practicing, and we would put our fastest guys on the scout team at the quarterback position so that, you know, I got to now chase this man down in practice, and we got to fit up properly, all this stuff. So, like I said, for about 30 days, we were just practicing. We're like, okay, I got to get ready for this fast guy. He's a 4.4, all this stuff. So, you know, we get ready, we go to the game, and then we line up against Nebraska. I'm like, oh, okay, you know, guys are pretty big guys. They got two fullbacks, and they had the running back about 230 pounds, and, of course, Eric Crouch. So they run their option play, and I swear to God, Kevin, I thought we were in slow motion. I was like, why is this going so damn slow? These guys are slow as hell. So I go and I'm running. I'm like, are you kidding me? Is this it? And then, you know, Eric Crouch is supposed to be the 4.4 guy. You know, I run him down. Ed Reed runs him down. We're like, oh, hell no. Like, we're good. So I'll never forget after the first series, my defensive coordinator, Randy Shannon, at the time, he would always call me on the phone. He'd be up in the box and would ask me, hey, how's the team look? What can I call? Are we good to go? So he rings in. I pick up the phone. He's like, hey, so before he can even get it out, I was like, they're too slow. We're good. He was like, huh? I said, trust me. We're good. They're too slow. Call whatever you want. And I just hung up. And that was it. And that's when I knew that we were going to win, because I was like, there is no way in hell this slow team is ever, ever going to beat us in this game. No chance.
Oh, that's great. Okay, one more. Just everybody knows about the Ed Reed lecture in the hallway. Take me to that game and what exactly went down. When he's telling everybody that he's hurt. I'm hurt, man. What was behind this?
Yeah, so this is my first time at Doak Campbell, and this is actually a legit fast team, right? So we're there, and, you know, they have talent. We have talent, and, you know, it's FSU week all week long. Ed Reed, FSU week. Let's get ready for FSU week. All right. So now we get up there, and we're playing well. At least I thought we were playing well. You know, I'm a sophomore starting, first time at Doak. We're winning. And so we go into halftime, and I'm listening to, you know, coach saying, hey, we got them right where we want them, all this stuff. You know, we're doing well. And I'm like, okay, cool. So I'm ready to go back out. Before I go back out, Ed Reed, he's like, hey, I'm tired of all this shit. Hey, stop asking if I'm hurt. No, I'm hurt. I'm hurt. And we're like, what the hell is going on? So I looked over at DJ Williams. I'm like, yo, what's the score of the game? He's like, well, I think we're winning. I'm like, what the hell is going on? Why am I getting yelled at? And I'm like, I looked up, I was like, wait, we're winning the game. I'm getting cussed out by Ed Reed because we're not playing. And then I was like, holy shit, well, I guess I better play harder then. So we better step up. We thought we were winning the damn game, but okay. So we go back out there, and, you know, we beat them down. We beat them by like 21 or something like that, called the dogs off in the fourth quarter. But that was always amazing. I was like, okay, now I understand what this is all about. When he had that speech, I was like, okay, I get it now. I get it.
You guys had 28 points in the third quarter after the speech, and you win 49-27. That's the greatest 11-second speech ever in the history of sports.
Because when I say I was shocked, I was like, I thought I was going crazy. I was like, damn, we must be losing. I was like, oh man, like, I came in, I'm all messed up mentally because I'm like, we're losing, but I feel kind of good about how we've been playing. And then Ed Reed's cussing me out, and I was like, wait, are we winning?
That explains why you guys were the greatest, I think, collection of talent in college football. Hey, listen, this has been great. JV, thanks for joining us here on the College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock, and looking forward to working with you, of course, Friday night, Pac-12 championship game featuring Utah versus Oregon on ABC.
Sounds good, Kev. I'll see you Friday and then Saturday as usual.
Want to thank our sponsors, Allstate and Dr. Pepper, here on the podcast, as well as JV, Jonathan Velma, and David Pollock for joining us. Excellent work from our producer, Taylor Schwenk. If you enjoyed this podcast and you want more, all you have to do is subscribe to the College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock. And, of course, remember to subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcast. We appreciate it. Enjoy championship weekend. And those questions are great for our guys, Herbie and Pollock. Tweet using the hashtag CFBPod. Talk to you soon.